case of the day, the United States v. Boone.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Counsel. I'm Christina Farley Jackson of the Federal Defender Program, and I represent the appellant, Stephen Boone, in this case. This is a case where the government used a hindsight approach and was permitted to introduce evidence that was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial to Mr. Boone. The evidence presented at trial was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial in three instances. The government's introduction of the evidence of acts regarding Kalpana Plowman was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial. The government's presentation of evidence regarding acts concerning James Patterson was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial. And the government's introduction of evidence regarding Andre Packelt was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial. The indictment charged a wide-ranging mail fraud scheme with numerous incidents, but it only alleged a single mailing. And that mailing occurred in April of 2003. This mailing occurred long before the other alleged episodes, and it had no relationship to them. And the district court allowed the government to offer evidence of these other episodes.
Tell me this, Ms. Jackson. Is it your argument that in a mail fraud case, the government may only introduce evidence of the scheme that is directly related to the mailing, or at least evidence that is close in time to that mailing? Because it seems to me that if the government bears the burden of establishing the scheme, that you would have the court handcuff the ability of the government to prove its case by sort of artificially limiting what evidence can be used to establish the scheme.
It is our position that that evidence has to be linked to the mailing, because in the crime of mail fraud, the crime is more than just the scheme. It's the execution of the scheme. And if the evidence presented, as it in this case was presented with regards to Plowman, Patterson, and Packelt, does nothing further in terms of establishing a defendant's knowing participation in the scheme, or does nothing further to prove a fact of consequence, then it's our position that that evidence is irrelevant and unduly prejudicial and should not be admitted.
I thought your position was a little different. I thought your position was if Alderman Troutman had gone to trial, all of this would have been perfectly appropriate, right?
Yes.
And you would have been entitled to a limiting instruction, but it all would have come in.
Yes, it would have been completely different. Because if Alderman Troutman had gone to trial, in this case, Mr. Boone was the only individual at trial, and the government was permitted to introduce this evidence regarding this overarching scheme of which Troutman may have had knowledge about, but there is no evidence that was presented linking Mr. Boone to these other acts and these other episodes.
But by establishing the systemic nature of the bribery and the extortion and, you know, the sort of incredibly open and obvious manner in which the requests for payments were made, doesn't that establish that Mr. Boone, as the Alder person's housing coordinator, had to have had the requisite knowledge?
No, we believe that it doesn't, because specifically with respect to this evidence concerning Ms. Plowman, Mr. Patterson, and Mr. Packelt, they all acknowledged that Mr. Boone was not concerned or not involved with any of their acts alleged. There was no evidence that was presented by the government linking Mr. Boone to any of these other episodes. There was no acknowledgement that he even had received any payment or any benefit from this. And all of these episodes, again, occurred after the date of the mailing. So they all occurred well after the April 2003 mailing. So the government cannot attempt to put forth this hindsight approach and essentially try to convince the jury that Mr. Boone should have known about the full scope of the scheme using only evidence concerning parts of a scheme that occurred after the date of the mailing.
But see, let me try and explain my problem. Mr. Boone appears to have contested throughout that he had knowledge or that he was a knowing participant in the scheme. So what the government was doing was introducing evidence of the blatant systemic nature of the bribery and extortion that was going on in that office as evidence that he, as the housing coordinator, had to have known of a scheme which is so intricately connected to real estate. I mean, that was his area. That's what he was. He was, you know, the real estate person in that office.
He was working as the housing coordinator. However, what they introduced was evidence regarding other episodes that Mr. Boone was not aware of. They attempted to make him aware of and become a member of this overarching scheme by linking him to episodes that occurred after the date of the charged mailing. Ms. Plowman acknowledges that her meeting occurred with Troutman. No one else was present. Mr. Packold acknowledged that Mr. Boone was not involved in those parts of the episodes that concerned him that were contesting. And Mr. Patterson also did not acknowledge Mr. Boone being involved as well. So whereas Troutman may have been aware of these other episodes, the parts that occurred after the date of the charged mailing, there was no evidence presented that Mr. Boone was a member of this and knew the full scope of this scheme. Further, with regards to the bribery count, I think it's important to note that Mr. Boone was acquitted on both bribery counts, and those counts were related to the evidence of Greer, and the charge mailing here, dated April 2003, is also linked to Mr. Greer and the State Street property, so it concerns that specifically. And the jury deliberated for about 4 days in this case, and they only spent one of those days concerning the bribery count. The others were concerning the mail fraud count, which they ultimately convicted on, and they were instructed that they consider whether or not the government had proven any parts of the scheme that they had alleged in the indictment. And we would submit that because this evidence that was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial was admitted, it's not a far stretch to look at the jury to think that they consider this as they properly were instructed they could consider.
Ms. Jackson, wasn't the jury, though, also instructed that they would have to find beyond a reasonable doubt that the mailing that was connected to the South State Street property was in furtherance of the alleged fraudulent scheme?
Yes, they were also instructed on
that. Why doesn't that fix the problem that you say is posed by the instruction that any one of the episodes would be sufficient to convict?
It doesn't fix the problem because the date of the mailing was in 2003. The other parts of the scheme that we are objected to concerning that evidence all occurred after that 2003 date. So they all involve activity of which no one who took the stand testified that Mr. Boone was involved in. There was no evidence presented that Mr. Boone was involved in that activity, yet the jury was instructed that they could consider those episodes part of that scheme, which related back to a mailing that preceded those episodes. So essentially, they could use those episodes that post-dated the mailing in order to essentially infer that Mr. Boone was aware of the full scope of the scheme. And we believe that that was unduly prejudicial. The scheme that was alleged by the government was extensive, and it was overarching as we presented, as viewed by Alderman Troutman, however, because she was at the center of that scheme. But it was not overarching with respect to Mr. Boone, particularly not at the time of that single mailing that they charged, and they only charged one mailing in this case. What happened later, after the mailing, did not affect Mr. Boone's knowledge of the scheme at the time of the mailing, and the evidence of the events that occurred after the mailing were irrelevant.
Did any of those events that occurred after the mailing, Ms. Jackson, speak to a time period prior to the mailing?
They did not, because the event concerning Ms. Plowman took place, and I believe it was late 2003, and that concerned a specific her coming in to speak with Alderman Troutman requesting support. I believe she dealt with low-income housing, and she was trying to get property in the ward regarding that. The incident concerning James Patterson occurred in late 2003, and again, that was concerning his specific request for a zoning request regarding property. And concerning Mr. Packold, that was actually, it occurred over a span of time from about late 2003 until 2005.
Any of those events deal with letters of support?
The events that we've contested did not. They did not deal with letters of support. Well, I should correct that. The individuals were requesting letters of support,
yeah,
but none were ever actually sent out.
The reason I ask that, didn't Mr. Boone acknowledge that he played a large role generally in drafting letters of support?
He did. He acknowledged that because that was a job as his housing coordinator.
No, I understand. I mean, he was in his job description.
Yes.
So you don't feel there's a potential tie there between acknowledging that he generally is involved in letters of support and speaking to these other events that, as you say, post-date the one charge mailing?
No, I don't believe there is a tie, because in this case, and there were very unique factors in this case, with Ms. Plowman, it never even got to the point where it went beyond a meeting of her and Ms. Troutman. So there was never a request that was sent to Mr. Boone to even file a letter of support, because during that instance, she was speaking with Ms. Plowman and informed her there were certain things that she had to do to take care of the office in order to get the letter of support. Ms. Plowman did not want to do those things. She refused to, and so it never even went beyond that meeting of Alderman Troutman and Ms. Plowman. With regards to Mr. Patterson, a similar situation. It never developed to taking the issue of letters of support and having it being submitted to Mr. Boone. It was just merely the talk at the meeting between Ms. Troutman and Mr. Patterson, where she was requesting that he buy extra fundraising tickets if he wanted to receive this benefit of the zoning change. So it was never an issue that would have even been, that was presented to Mr. Boone. And there's no evidence presented that he was even aware of this. When all of these individuals took the stand, they acknowledged that Mr. Boone was not involved in their specific episodes. We believe that the government is still required to link their charged mailing with specific facets of the scheme, even when it's offered proof of a single scheme with multiple parts. And they've made an argument that they should be allowed and are indeed required to prove all of the elements that they allege. However, that's still governed by the federal rules of evidence, and we submit that the introduction of these other schemes and these other episodes was irrelevant and unduly prejudicial and should have been excluded.
Want to reserve some time?
I do. I see my light has come on. I would reserve this for rebuttal.
Thank you, Ms. Jackson.
May it please the court. My name is Tony Owagu, and I represent the United States. The issue in this appeal is whether evidence concerning certain episodes of Alderman Troutman's misconduct can be admitted at the trial of Stephen Boone. And under this court's mail fraud jurisprudence, the answer is yes. If two individuals are involved in a single scheme, then each individual's actions and conduct that are in furtherance of that scheme can be used at the trial of the other co-schemer.
I have spent a lot of time thinking about this case, and the reason I have is that I want to know, bottom line, what you believe is the limiting principle here. Is there any limit as to what the government may consider to constitute a single scheme, whereas here you have a series of discrete acts of bribery and extortion involving different individuals. Although, of course, they were anything but discrete. You know what I mean by discrete. And interpreted, if we interpret this expansively, couldn't the government use a single mailing involving an isolated incident with one person and then introduce years worth of similar bad acts involving other persons that are related to the first instance only in that they involve the same corrupt politician and the same pattern of shakedowns? So how far can we take the fact that Mr. Boone's defense was no knowledge?
Well, Your Honor, first I want to address the general point of couldn't the government introduce years of separate bribery transactions? And I would say that certainly the district court always has the authority to prevent cumulative evidence from coming in. Now, with respect to this specific case, the government only introduced really four limited episodes of bribery transactions. And I want to point out that Stephen Boone was an active participant in the scheme during the entire period of the transactions that were presented at trial. In the spring of 2002, you have Mr. Greer testifying that Stephen Boone asked him for a bribe.
But the jury acquitted him on those charges, right?
Yes, that is correct.
On both of the bribery charges?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
But Mr. Greer testified in spring of 2002 that Mr. Boone asked him for a bribe. And then you have, in the fall of 2005, you have Andy Roman testifying that Mr. Boone called him seeking a bribe on behalf of the alderman. And in between these two bookend events of Greer and Roman, you have the testimony of Plowman, Patterson, and Picoult. And Stephen Boone was an active member of that scheme throughout the entire period. He may have left the office, but he never left the scheme. So I guess my answer to you in this context would be that the government introduced episodes and transactions of bribery attempts that occurred entirely while Stephen Boone was an active participant of the scheme.
So what's the limiting principle?
Well, I'm not sure.
In other words, you can bring up four incidents, only one of which?
Your Honor, I think it would have to be examined on a case-by-case basis. I mean, certainly the district court has the ability to say at some point the evidence of bribes occurring, you know, years outside of the mailing may be too cumulative. Like, I understand that you have to look at the length of the trial. You don't want the jury to be sitting in a trial for months while the government introduces evidence. But here, this was a very limited number of events. I mean, this trial lasted, there's less than a week of testimony. And again, there were four discrete transactions. In each transaction, Stephen Boone was still an active participant of the scheme. Now, Stephen Boone was...
What's the evidence that says he was doing that in connection with the Plowman or Patterson transactions?
Well, there is no direct evidence linking Stephen Boone to Plowman or Patterson. Ms. Plowman testified that Stephen Boone did not ask her for a bribe. He wasn't at the meeting, and same with James Patterson. But the reason that we know that Stephen Boone was still a participant in the scheme was that the Plowman event occurred in August of 2004. And in the fall of 2005, Stephen Boone calls Andy Roman, another building developer, seeking a bribe from Mr. Roman, and that's after the Plowman event, and that's after the Plowman testimony. So we see from
but
that
it's not the same building.
No, that's correct. It is not the same building, but the government, in proving its mail fraud case, had to prove the existence of a scheme. And the government did that by putting on the testimony of these building developers to discuss their experiences in dealing with the alderman's office. And Greer, in 2002, testified that Stephen Boone asked him for a bribe, and Roman testified that in 2005, Boone asked him for a bribe. So what Plowman and Patterson, what their testimony did, was it filled in the gaps for the jury, and it showed the jury that this scheme, that the Greer and the Roman, those bribery attempts, those were not unique events. Those were not isolated occurrences. Plowman and Patterson's testimony painted a more complete picture for the jury and showed that this was, in fact, a scheme, and it was continuous, and it was ongoing.
Is it your theory that there was no legitimate, letters of credit ever issued during that time frame? I mean, is it the government's position this is so totally corrupt that everybody who walks in and Boone is there 24/7, let's say, so you had to be aware of everything that went down? Is that really where we're at here?
No, that's not the government's position. Each building developer who testified that they were asked for a bribe, that they were somehow extorted. And the government put on each building developer to show that this was a scheme. So the government is certainly not saying...
What's the scheme? Is the scheme that everybody who walks in is shaken down?
No.
The scheme has got to be, I guess, speaking to more than one vignette, right?
Right. In this case, the scheme would be that building developers who wanted the alderman's support for their building developments and their projects in the 20th Ward, they were asked for bribes. Now, the government only put on the testimony of building developers who had these experiences. So certainly, I don't want to suggest that Stephen Boone would have been... Stephen Boone may have been responsible for every single thing that ever went on at the alderman's office, or had knowledge of every single event that went on at the alderman's office. But under this court's mail fraud jurisprudence, an individual does not need to have knowledge of every single transaction to still be a participant of the scheme. So the fact that Stephen Boone was not aware of, he says he was not aware of this Plowman incident, that doesn't preclude him from being a member of this scheme.
Even though he's acquitted of it?
Well, he was convicted of the mail fraud charges.
Of course,
that's correct.
But not the bribery.
He was not convicted of the bribery. But, you know, with respect to the jury possibly rendering inconsistent verdicts here, I just think that it's futile for us to speculate. Perhaps the jury was being lenient. The jury was instructed that...
Well, you had some witness problems, right? I mean, Plowman and Patterson were a lot more attractive witnesses than Mr. Greer, the drug dealer, right?
Well, Mr. Greer was
I assume that had something to do with your trial strategy here.
Well, I will say that Andy Roman and Andy Picoult also testified that they were shaken down and involved in these bribery attempts, and Andy Roman testified that Mr. Boone asked him for a bribe.
Let me ask you, Mr. Owagu, about the point the defense has made about both the arguments and the instructions, saying you don't have to find we proved every one of these episodes. One is enough. And it seems that with or without a connection to the mailing.
Well,
And where's the connection between the mailing and Plowman, Patterson, et cetera?
Well, first, I think that the defense may have been reading that argument slightly out of context. And first, I want to emphasize that that was a closing argument, and that was not a jury instruction. And after that closing argument, the court and the government instructed the jury that in order to convict, that they would have to find that this mailing was in furtherance of the scheme. And if there are no further questions, I would just like to end by asking that the verdict, the jury's verdict, and the judgment in the district court be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner.
Thank you.
Ms. Jackson.
Thank you, Your Honors. I'm available to answer any questions that you may have.
Apparently, you're escaping our wrath. We know your position, and we'll take the case under advisement. Thanks to you and all counsel.
Thank you.